Blog Talk Radio.
If he ain't got the nod factor going on, then there might be something wrong, but that's not the issue with me, or a issue, I should say.
Well, I want you to tell our audience exactly how you started, how you started doing music.
Okay. I started like a lot of cats did. I was in about 11 or 12 years old, started playing in a middle school band. I had an uncle who was in the Army bands out here in Colorado that I watched growing up. That also played saxophone, did it professionally, you know, was pretty well known. So I wanted to be like him and decided saxophone wasn't going to be the thing. It was either that or drums. And just so happened that the band had too many drummers for sixth grade band. So I ended up on the sax, which is what I wanted anyway. And then I just played at school until I was about 16 or 17, and I decided it's something I really wanted to do. And I had already been listening to a lot of jazz and trying to emulate my favorite players, you know. And, of course, I was into hip-hop and New Jack Swing and all that good stuff. So music was becoming my life and my outlet and my, you know, my main thing. So as I got a little older, I went to college for music at University of Denver, studied there under some really great instructors and professors, and kind of honed my craft in the college thing. And I started playing professionally around that same time too, around Colorado Springs and then Denver, up through Fort Collins and the college towns out here in Colorado. So those are pretty much what my formative years were. I ended up opening for people like the Shy Lights and the Delphonics and Dennis Edwards and the Temptations Review, the Manhattan, you know, all these old school bands. And eventually led up to me a few years later recording with the band out of Fort Collins. They were called Metal Art Jiving, and I did that. I did about 3 albums with them. Started playing a lot of, you know, rap demos, hip hop demos around the cats around Colorado. You know, giving them horn samples and stuff like that. And you know, I just did what a lot of guys do. You know, just played professionally for a number of years. Had a day job on the side,
right?
And just paid my dues. You know, opening up for people. And finally, about 2008, I said, you know, I've had enough of this brick house and my girl and Mr. Magic, and this is how we do it.
Explain it a lot.
Yeah, so I said, okay, it's time for Tony Exum Jr. to do Tony Exum Jr. It's time for me to be the artist that I set out to be. So I put the band together and started working on the new CD while, within that first year of having the band. And in 2010, I dropped Finally. It's my first solo record. And just been on the grind ever since then. And now I'm getting ready to drop my new CD, which is called The One, in about 2 weeks. And I'm really excited about it. So that's kind of the Cliff Notes version of my music journey. You know, I've had a lot of good experiences, though. I've I played with some cats, too. I played with Dave Hollister, played with Mickey Howard, a lot of different smooth jazz people, namely like Lick Coleone and Marcus Anderson and Gail Johnson and Julian Vaughn, Tim Bowman, you know, people in the contemporary jazz vein. And I've just got done opening up for Monica and Lloyd with a singer named Asher from California. We did a show with them about 2 weeks ago in Houston. So I've shared stage with some really good people, man, and that's also been a big reason why I'm able to do what I do now.
I've seen a picture of you with a couple other folks, but one of my heroes, Pamela Williams.
Oh, man.
Man,
yeah.
Man, hey, dude, when I got her out a couple of years back, I fell out. I was like, oh, I got to get everything she did.
Pamela's one of my favorites, man. Pamela is a sweetheart, man. She's so cool.
Okay.
You know, she's such a nice lady, you know, and I had such a good time performing with her. We did a show in Baltimore, Maryland, last October. And it was me and Pamela and two other horn players from the D.C. area. We did what they call the Grown and Sexy show. and Pamela was the headliner. She was celebrating 20 years in the business at the time. And she got busy, boy. I said, whoa, okay.
I don't know, because like I said, when I got that CD, I was taken to another horizon. I was like, oh. I got to get everything now. She got it in my pocket real quick, right?
Yeah, man, I remember when I first heard her, I was like, wow, you know. And, you know, when it comes to saxophone, there's only like a really, literally a handful of female saxophone players, you know. So when you find one that can play and she's fine, it's like, okay, I'm not going to hate.
Deadly combination.
Yeah, she's a knockout, man, and she just has a good sound, you know, and I just love what she does. So that was a good accomplishment for me, man, because I really appreciated her feedback of me and her showmanship. You know, we actually did two shows together, last June in Denver, a festival out here, and then that show in October. So hopefully we'll share the stage again soon.
The song that you sent me, one of them, the title. I haven't played any of them because I play them when I listen to it on the show. Your eyes, your lips, your smile. Look, dude, that title just had me like, yo. That's a couple of yo. I could have put your eyes, your lips, your smile. Explain that song.
I was in a relationship, man, and it was long distance. And I was missing her, and we were on the phone one night. She lives in California, and I said, you know, I got this song with you in mind, you know, for my new album. This was like way back in like September, October, and that title just came to my head. I just kept saying, your eyes, your lips, your smile, because that was one of the things that I really liked about her, you know. Mm-hmm. She had really, really pretty eyes, and beautiful lips, and she had this smile that just was like killer, you know.
Right.
And I thought, I'm going to write a song titled that. And then Julian Vaughn, the bass player, who you need to check out too, man, from Kansas City.
Yeah, I need to check that.
He liked to answer to Wayman Tisdale, but he's not Wayman. He's his own thing.
Right.
He was like, Tony, man, I got a song for your record. I got the song. He's just screaming Tony X and Junior. He's like, this track is all you. He sent it to me. I said, that's the one. That's the one I should write to for her. So the song was really about her, man, and just the way she made me feel at that time. You know, our relationship didn't work out. You know, long-distance things are pretty hard, especially when you're a musician, you know. But we're still really, really close friends, and I told her, I said, I'm still going to put that song on my record because I still, you know, I still have feelings for her. I mean, I still think about it all the time. We're still cool. Just didn't work out right now. Like, that song is definitely her, though.
This is Tony XM Jr., your eyes, your lips, your smile. How about that? That thing was rocking, bro.
Thanks, man. Thanks, man.
I
appreciate
I liked it. And I felt the emotion in the song, having that long-distance relationship, too.
Yeah, man. It was one of those hard things, because it seemed like every time I really saw her was when, like, I was on the road, you know, either to Arizona or California. You know, I really couldn't just go out there when I wanted to. And I just was really just, you know, missing her, because I think what happened was last October, I had seen her like 3 weekends straight because I was on the road on the West Coast like 3 weekends in a row. So she was there for all those gigs. And it got to the point where it started to feel kind of normal. And then all of a sudden, I was gone. And my, you know how that is, man. It's like, dang, I just saw her for like 3 weeks.
Right.
And now I'm back home, and I don't know when I'm going to see her again. And I just finally had to kind of like, you know, slow that down because it was really just hurting me, man, you know, emotionally. But I put a lot of that to the record. I ain't gonna lie. And luckily, we're still friends. You know, we're still cool. We still talk on the phone, and she's still very supportive of what I do. So maybe we can come full circle later.
Has she heard this song?
Yeah, she heard it.
Yeah,
and she knew it was for her too. I didn't tell her that. You know,
right.
When she heard the chorus, she was like, she said she just. I started smiling ear to ear, and she just couldn't stop for like 10 minutes. I was like, I knew you were going to like it, you know. But I did it on another talk show, and she happened to be listening, and she, you know. And then the funny thing was, everybody that knew we were together also knew that song was for her, so that was pretty cool.
Well, that's cool. And you write from different experiences. You come up with the idea for each record through, you know, personal things that's happened, or just something that you're going through, or something that you're feeling?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think almost every note you play has a story behind it, is what I say, you know, or any lick or phrase or solo or even a melody, you know, and you draw from something. Or sometimes, man, it may not be from something totally personal, but the song, like let's say you have a track that's already done and you're writing to it, which I did a lot of that on this new record. It made me feel a certain way.
Right.
You know, just listening to it was like, man, I'm getting this emotion that's coming over me because of the way this track is making me feel, even though I may not have experienced lately or totally personally. So then you kind of throw in your interpretation of what you would do musically or how you would feel emotionally through your song if that experience was yours. It's almost like how, like, Michael Jackson, when he killed She's Out of My Life. You know, Michael hadn't really had no real relationship at that point. But when you listen
right.
to that song, that dude had his heart broken. Like, he's crying at the end of it and stuff. And apparently at that point, Michael hadn't really had too many girlfriends. So it's like, but he still made you feel like he was hurt. And you lived through that song if you've ever, you know, had some woman walk out on you. So that's what I do sometimes. And I think about, there's one other song. I didn't send it to you on my records called Should I Trust. And I think we've all been to that. And it made me think about, when you're in a relationship with somebody and you're not sure if you should totally trust them yet, but you're really digging them, kind of
right.
at the crossroads, it just made me feel like that, so I named it Should I Trust, and it actually worked. So, but again, just to further answer your question, yeah, definitely there are songs that I pulled from that heart-wrenching things, or even things that made me happy, or just, you know, silly childhood memories, or whatever it is that you're going through at the moment, good or bad, it all comes through in the music one way or another.
Now, do you sing on any of the background of your tracks?
On this album, I didn't do any background on the previous one I did, but I let the singers that I know that I work with do their thing.
Right.
I did the vocal arrangement on that last song that you heard, though.
Oh, yeah. I could feel it. Because
yeah.
I know you had something to say where it needed to be. Yeah, I could feel it happen already.
Okay.
Because I thought you might have even sung background because you... It was you. It was more, you know, personal.
Yeah, and I was going to, but once I heard what they did, it was like, I'm not touching that.
Yeah. It sounds great. I'll tell you that.
Thanks.
It's called Right Here, right there. And you spell uh-huh. Right, R-I-T-E. I just want folks to know, right there, where you spell it.
I spelled it that way because it's one of them songs that is so funky that, you know, you're not going to say it right. You're like, man, that's right there. And that's what we share in the studio. Like, that joint is right there.
You're
so
right.
I just, I just took the little phonetical spell and all that, you know, give it some personality, I guess.
Right there. Right
uh-huh.
now.
And this was the track was produced by
magazine. We're a new quarterly publication based out of Houston, Texas, which is full of exclusive investigative interviews that look into the histories and journeys of independent musicians, business owners, media personalities, creative artists, and several unique organizations from around the world. We often have guest writers who share their expertise in various fields, including relationships, health, culture, and more. We just released our July-September issue, and you're going to love the lineup. To see who we've got, Download the IndieGator to your Android and iPad devices today. You can also order your copy and read more of the IndieGator right now on our blog at www.theindiegatormag.com. The coolest thing about our magazine, though, is that we feature this radio station right here. I'm Kitty Williams from the IndieGator magazine, and you're tuned in to ATAZP Live.
Right there. Hey, man, that joint was, hey, when you break it down, you just go by what you're feeling or it's just playing to hit these different notes that you're hitting. I mean, because
yeah,
like, from the breakdown, it's like you going for what you know.
Oh, yeah. It was the track was so funky, man. I was like, I got to do something hot right there. I was in the studio just listening to the track with no saxophone, and me and my producer just sitting there bobbing our heads. Then we hit the space bar so to play again. It's like, all right, man, we got to write something. But we were so busy grooving, we weren't writing anything. But finally, I had to, like, really dig deep to make sure I had a good horn arrangement. He started thumbing this thing. He was like, yo, man, there's a breakdown in this song. So he took the rest of the track out, and right where you heard that breakdown, I started playing that riff, you know, bum, 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 bum. I just started playing that on my horn. He was like, there it is, that's right there. So,
and
I said,
what
is doing is big.
I didn't mean to cut you off. Who produced the track?
Oh, it's all good. It's a young cat who actually just got a record deal. He's only 20 years old or 19 years old. He's a phenomenal musician. His name is Nicholas Cole, young brother out of Missouri, plays keyboards. He's already working with major artists and recording, not just playing for, but recording and mixing and mastering other people's records. So he's a quadruple threat in the studio, and he wrote that for me in mind, I guess. And he's just a phenomenal cat, you know, to be as young as he is. It was a pleasure to have him on the record, and he just released a new album, actually. So be on the lookout for him. His name is Nicholas Cole.
Okay. I wrote it down. It's like I'm going to school as I'm talking to you at the same time. Who are some of the artists that you already said Pamela Williams, you loved her. Who are the other artists that just influenced you and just, like, you just got to have it right now?
Oh, man. As far as saxophone players go, Grover Washington Jr., George Howard, Nazee, Gerald Albright, Art Porter, Kirk Whalum, David Sanborn, you know, Kenny Gorelick, Ronnie Laws, Cannonball Adderley, Charlie Parker, Dexter Gordon, Jeff Lorber influenced me, George Benson influenced me, Norman Brown has had some influence on me. I love the way he wrote his song and stuff. Alex Boumian, guys like that in the jazz realm. Hip hop has a big influence on me, man. And New Edition, you know, my favorite group of all time still.
Okay.
They're them and all their different offshoot groups. You know, they're like five groups in one group.
Sort of like Parliament. Yeah.
You know, exactly. So, you know, then Parliament, not you bring them up, Parliament, Funkadelic definitely had an influence on me, man. I mean, as a kid, as a little tiny time, my family had me big in Parliament. So that whole arsenal of musicianship definitely pushed me as a younger musician growing up. So that's a big, kind of a big, kind of sums it up. And then, of course, you know, I think everybody was influenced by Michael and Prince in one way or another. So
I want you to give your information so people can hit you up.
Okay.
How to CD, definitely. I'm going to have to go. I'm going to have to go on and buy it because I'm mad now.
Cool. The CD is going to be available on CD Baby, iTunes, Amazon MP3 the first week of August, mainly August 1st is when it's going to drop. And then my other CD, my first CD, finally, that's available right now. So if you want to check out some of my older songs that I had out in 2010, check that out. Check me out at TonyExumJrOnline.com. And as a matter of fact, you can pre-order your copy of The One, my new record, right away. You know, $15, you get a pre-order in, and I'll ship it out to you as soon as it drops. And then also, everybody who got your smartphones out, I want you to text TE, the letters TE, to this number. It's 719-425-4600. 719-425-4600. Send me a text, just put TE, and you'll be on my mass text list. So whenever I got something going on or I'm in your area, you know, I'll send you a text message and let you know what's cracking.
Okay. for Tony E. I definitely appreciate you coming in, man. Like I didn't tell a lot of people, you're a bad boy. So keep on pumping it up, dog. And definitely, we talk behind the scenes. And whenever you're in the ATL, come through, man. Give me a holler.
Oh, absolutely. I'm trying to get out that way, man, as soon as I can. So, you know, let's chat, you know, on Facebook or, you know, give me a holler, man, and we'll got to figure out a way to get to your area, man. I've been trying to get booked out there and hasn't worked out yet, but I'm coming, especially with this new album. So I look forward to it, man. And thank you, bro, for having me, man. Thanks a lot.
It's all good. And like I said, anytime, that's Tony XM Jr. Thank you, sir.
All right, bro. Thanks a lot. Y'all have a good one.
Area code 561. 561. Area code 561. You're on ATAZP Live.
Hello. It's Bernard.
What's up? This is Bernard Big One Williams. Been on the show before. Beatmaker extraordinaire. Every time I hear one of your beats, I'll be like, dude. Because you put music, I know this ain't no word, but you put musicality into your music. You see what I'm saying? Most people.
You know
just,
what? Between me and you, we're going to make it a word. We're going to make it a word. We're going to make it a word.
That's what you do, Cat, because a lot of people just do beats. But you actually do music, man, because when I heard, when you first came on, and I had heard you previously before I had you on the show, definitely I was a fan. And I make beats.
Hey, I appreciate it.
I listen to your beats going, man, I need to get one of them beats. Remember the last time you was on? I was like,
yeah, I remember. I've been
like,
home.
It made me sick up here. Now I got to go back and make some beats like you. For real.
Oh, man, I appreciate it, bro. It's just a
so how you been, man?
You know, a couple of mishaps, you know, with the hospital situation, but I'm way better. I'm blessed to be alive, you know. Blessed to be able to do this interview today. There.
I'm glad you came
there.
In, man. And I'm dying to play a beat, so I'm getting ready to get to one. The Mystic Voyage. Explain that.
Oh, man. That's like, you know, like, for a long time, I've been doing, like, a lot of, like, you know, different variations of music, but a lot of people didn't know I can do, like, you know, kind of like techno dance type stuff. And
Right. Me
personally, it's really, some people hear it, they'll say it's like an up-to-date dance type thing, but really it's not. It comes from, like, listening to, like, Duran Duran with a mixture of, like, Boy George with a mixture of, like, the 80s Miami bass kind of thing, but
Right. It's
kind of variated with the day sound, so it's like, it's like a Euro track, but they got a lot of, you know, emphasis on it from, like, you know, just an up tempo, like boom, 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 but it's going in a different, like in a different rhythm, how would you put it? But I tried to space it out some. You can tell some of the sounds are very different from, like, my normal tracks. And it's one of the tracks I did when I got out of the hospital. I did, like, 40 tracks when I got out of the hospital in, like, 4 days. And that happened to be one of the first ones I did. So I had fun with that one.
Here's Mystic Voyage by Big One Williams. Yeah. Mystic Voice, that's Big One on ATAZP. I felt the Euro and European style, but I liked it, man. I liked it a lot. It still has musicality off in there.
Okay.
I could hum that. You said you got out of the hospital and did how many tracks?
40 in like 4 days.
Dude. The heck with all that, bro.
And what's so bad about it? I did no 40 in 4 days, and I haven't done a beat in 4 days. So it's like, dang, did I run out of ideas or just, I don't know, but I'll get back to it. I got so many. I've just been going down there trying to learn how to, you know, do better mixing than I did, you know, with other tracks I've done. I'm trying to get that mixing aspect done. Because what a lot of people don't know, like when you do tracks, it's not always, you know, the equipment that always determines the mixing, too. Because you might throw a reverb on the drum, and it might make it sound totally different from what you thought the drum was supposed to sound in the keyboard. But once you get it out, it's all about your post-production, what you do to it after. So that's what I've been trying to get down pat, too. A lot of panning and reverbing and, you know, using the Wavedale, too. A lot of different, you know, just trying different mix techniques and stuff on the beat. Not like songs, but just the beat itself.
Right. And all that goes into it. You got to at least try to do different things to make the sound a lot more better. And then a lot of people will be asking you, well, how did you? people that really listen to music or do beats to be, how did you do that to make it sound like, and that's your own style, see what I'm saying?
Exactly. I get it a lot.
So how long you been doing beats, man? And what equipment are you using now?
I started doing beats in 1997, and the first thing I had got was the Zoom Rhythm Track 123, which was a sampler. I remember it to this day. It was orange. It had orange, and it was great. And it came with this Fatboy Slim, like sample CD or whatever. It was like Jungle Brothers and Fatboy Slim. And I really got to sit down and listen to a lot of the stuff that they had on them. So I actually learned how to sample before I really learned how to actually make a full track, like, you know, like as a beat. But the next week after that.
Me too. It sounds like my own story because I learned how to sample before I learned how to make beats. And that helps you as far as listening to different sounds to put together. That actually helps. Yeah.
100%. And then, like, 2 weeks after that, I was sitting and I had got this book from Pro Sound Stage and Light, and they had the Zoom drum machine, which was the first drum machine that I knew of that had bass lines in it. It had the drum section, you know, the percussion section, it had bass, it didn't have any other sounds. Because, you know, then when you move up to that, you move up the groove box. But
right.
I had got a Zoom. I forgot what the name of it. It was a Dr. Zoom, like a Dr. Rhythm. And, you know, I bought one of those, too. I bought a Dr. Rhythm and I bought a own Zoom. You know, trying to see which drum machine was the best, you know. So it was like, I used that on a couple of tracks. And then I used the Casio. We had a Casio. And we hooked it up to the four-track tape recorder we had. And the biggest mistake I made, I thought that you could take those tapes out of those four tracks and put them in the radio.
No, you can't, my brother.
You're going to get a rude awakening.
You got to record those out. Yes,
you
sir.
You got to have an outsource, because if you don't, you're going to get a rude awakening. And that's what I got hurt. It just went crazy in the house. And I had it up loud. I'm like, yeah, we finna really hear this. I just be really got down. And you heard all that noise and all that feedback. It was like you had a mic, like a loud mic. Underwater or something. It was just horrible. But then after that, I had met up with one of my cousin Leroy. He died not too long ago, but he was a great beatmaker. And I met up with his homeboy Joe at Temple, and they both sat down with me. Like, Joe was more of the R&B dude. He could do any type of track, but he's real good at the R&B. And I sat down with him, and he gave me the idea of using, like, old school music and incorporating into, like, today's tracks. And around the time when he told me that, you know, Cash Money and No Limit was like real, well, No Limit was real heavy at the time. You know, Cash Money was around, but a lot of people didn't know them in the mainstream, unless you knew about, you know, Miss T and all them back, you know, further back. But I was on a lot of the, you know, a lot of the heavy down south stuff. So he was teaching me how to make R&B tracks, you know, with a lot of the, you know, a strong emphasis of a bass. And I was learning how to do it, but he put me on using the Groove Box. It was the Yamaha Remix 7. I still got it right now to this day. I got to get some buttons fixed on it. I put some work on the machine. A lot of these came out of it. And that's when I really started really getting deep into using the Groove Box. Like, now you're stepping up from just using drums and basses to you got synths, you got signs, you got pianos, guitars, everything. So I learned how to use a lot of different stuff with that Groove Box. And I think learning how to program from the Groove Box, because everything is done by hand. It's nothing automated. So you really have to, you make a mistake, you got to erase a whole track. There's nothing in there that you can just go in and just, you know, take something out.
Yeah.
So you got to play that whole track up. If you on track one and it's a piano, if track one get messed up, I erase it and do it over. And let's use the step editor. I never use the step editor because I always play my stuff. So I always had to, I always go back. But it made me better. Because I know some people like to use the overdub to record. Like, they'll play a certain part and stop. Then play the other part and stop and go back and fill in those parts. I can't really do that. It gets boring to me after a while. I have to play mine straight through. Because I always had that frame of mind. What if you didn't have the overdub and you just had to go straight across? You know, what if it's
right?
What if it's,
you're right. And I'm familiar with the Groove Box as well, because I was getting ready to buy that thing. I used to go in Guitar Center and play on it all the time.
Oh, man.
I was getting ready to buy that thing, but I just didn't. But I was getting close.
The one I want to buy, and people look at me crazy because, like, they see the stuff I work with now. Like I said, I don't use the Groove Box. I got my Groove Box, but it's just put up. Thing I use now, I use the Oxygen 49E. I think it's 49X or E. Whichever one. It's the 49 key with the sliders on it. See, all of them have sliders and knobs, but this one got sliders and knobs on it. And I use my laptop, but I use Presonus Studio One, and I rewire the Fruity Loops, the Reason, and then I use all the VSTs, like VSTs 1, 2, and 3. I use all of them on that one program. And then what I love about the program, you know, when you do especially if you do a track on the keyboard, you know, you always have to, you got to record it track for track in the program to get the WAV file. But with this program, it'll let you make the MIDI file, like you play the MIDI or the VST, you can press Control V, and it'll create a WAV file for it right there on the screen. So you can have a quick WAV file instead of having to go outside the program and bring it back in. It makes it for you right there on the screen. No matter where you made it, if you made it from Reason, the Reason plugin, or Fruity Loops plugin on the program, it'll make a WAV file, so it make the workflow faster. And it's a lot of drag and drop. So a lot of my stuff I do now, I use Presonus Studio One, the Pro Edition, and I just bring out my VST.
And I love talking technical because a lot of people think it's quite easy just to make a beat. Or just to come up with a beat. A lot of people think it's quite easy until you start talking about the technicality of it and what you use and how you got to do. And everybody be looking like, heck no, now it ain't easy.
Yeah.
The song you sent me, My Lifetime. Explain that one.
My Lifetime. That song was a song that, if you listen to the synthesizer, I collaborated with another friend of mine who's a beat maker, and named Timo Beatmaker, and he did the synthesizer on it. That one was more of a dramatic type track. Like, pretty much, if an R&B artist did it, it'd be a song about all the things they've been through and how they made it through. And if a rapper did the same thing, it'd be the same thing. It'd be, you know, it's more like one of those triumphant, like, yeah, I've been through some dark places, but now I see the light. You know, I never gave up type tracks. And, I mean, when you listen to it, you get the feeling of it. You feel it, especially in the strains. The strains really bring it out like that orchestra feel. The strains bring it out in that song. You listen to it closely. But that synth that you hear in the what's the name? In the hook. You know, Mahoma played that. He made it sound so good. like it got sold in it.
My lifetime.
I mean,
this is my big one beat.
This is Gary Fustin hanging out here with my man TAZ, keeping it live on ATAZP.com.
Forget which one you did now.
You right.
come right out the street and just did 40. I'm going to drop 40 on them, like, boom.
Man, that joint went, like, it was crazy because it was like, even when I was in the hospital, like, after I had my own, after I had the second surgery I had when I was in the hospital, I was like, hey, man, I'll go get my keyboard and go get my computer, and I want to work on music. Because it was a plus, I knew it wasn't going to happen to myself, you know what I'm saying, as long as I have it. And plus, it kept me from worrying about so much of what was going on. I didn't really have time to really be like, dang, I'm in a mess. I really didn't have time for that because I was working on music. When it was so bad, I had met, you know, new people. Like, it was a dude, he was in, like, two rooms across from me, and he found out I did beats. So he come over, I let him hit on the headphone, I'd be like, how this sound? He'd be like, man, you murdering that joint, man, you know what I'm saying? So we connected real well, you know. He kind of got over, he wasn't worried so much about his situation, I wasn't worried about mine, we were just worried about what to put in the beat and stuff, you know, he was giving me ideas, and, you know, and you met people like that, and then the nurses, they were checking out a lot of the tracks I had and stuff. Then I was funny, because I met a nurse in the hospital, her fiance, he's a rapper, and I didn't know, you know what I'm saying, that her fiance, you know, I didn't even know she knew anybody that did music. But she told him about the tracks and stuff. So I made, you know, a few connections when I was in there. So I was like, you know, I didn't really too much worry about the situation. I mean, in the situation we being in the hospital, it was very severe. But, you know, I think about it now and be like, wow, I went through all that. But as long as I was doing music, it didn't bother me. It was like music was very therapeutic. People say that, but when you really get in a situation where you can just turn on some music and just hear it and don't even think about what's going on, it's really therapeutic. There.
I'm glad you're doing all right, bro. I send up prayers to you for you.
I appreciate it.
And I'm glad that you're out of that situation and back where you belong, man, doing music.
Yeah.
You had sent me some, like before it even happened, I think, you had sent me some videos of different artists that you had did. And I was like, wow. Because I was feeling a lot of them. A lot of them I didn't even know, so continue to educate me with some of them artists for real, because I got to hit them up myself. Man, them cats were bad. I was like, man, I liked every video that you did send to me that one day we just was conversing on Facebook. And like I said,
yeah,
glad you're doing all right, man, for real. That's the main concern, for real.
I mean, God basically gave me a second chance for me to, you know, to maintain it and do what I need to do. And I know, you know, being able to do music is a God-given talent. So obviously he gave me a second chance for me to really maintain and really explode like I'm supposed to with this music. But not from the standpoint of, oh, I'm trying to be the best, but I'm trying to be the best I can be. You know what I'm saying? I'm not competing against anybody. Because I believe it's exposure and money out there for everybody. But you have some that feel like, I'm going to be the best in the world.
Right.
It don't work that way. There's always somebody going to be something better than you. But it's your job is to maintain and find your crowd, you know, build your crowd. And
right.
I'm learning that's the journey. And at the same time, it's to educate, too. It's not just to, you know, get a pocket full of money and I'm famous now and that's it. No, it's not even about that. It's about educating. And, you know, the next generation come along, you can teach them different things so they don't have to go through the pitfalls that you went through. Although you don't want to have it too easy, because you want them to appreciate what they do get when they do get rewarded. Yeah, it comes too easy, but at the same time, you do want them, you want to warn them of, you know, like dark spots that you have been through and stuff. But
right.
I do know what this music, like I say, you know, it's so much. Just, I mean, it was bad when I was a couple years back. I think I was on the internet and I was listening to music. And I'm so used to rappers beefing with each other, but when the producers started beefing with each other, I was like, oh, goodness, this is just getting out of hand. Just thinking about how, you know, how music just turned. I'm like, you do, but and a lot of those producers aren't rappers. See, you have people like me, and it's a bunch of people like me, that are rappers who happen to learn how to make beats because their financial situation wouldn't let them buy beats from people because they were so high at the time. There was no SoundClick at the time. You know, there wasn't anybody talking about $25 a beat. Yeah, dudes talking about $500, $2,500, you know, and more. So it's like, now it's like, think about it. It's like, it's many different ways for you to get exposure without downing the next person. You know, when I think about Timberland and Scott Storch, and, you know, maybe it's a publicity stunt. But at the same time, those type of things you shouldn't be putting out there in the game, because you have youngsters who come up and they look at either one or two of you guys and go, you know what? If that's how they got on, I'm going to find me somebody to be fair. And then it turns into stuff in the streets. And it's like, you know, it's just certain things. I feel like it should be more working together.
Right.
You know, I say it a lot of times. I tell a lot of people, I'd be like, individuals win awards and accolades, but only teams win championships. So if you team up with somebody and you go ahead and, you know, you make moves, it's better than going against each other, because you learn. You get to educate each other. You might learn something you didn't know. So I just think about with the business, like I say, I feel like the purpose is to learn, to educate, and to unify. I ain't saying you got to spend your whole life working with somebody else, but it's good to collab, because you'll learn different stuff from different people. And I feel like that's one of the big things that need to be brought to the forefront nowadays. You know what I'm saying? Like, especially just sitting down and just looking at my career in music. I don't work with so many producers. I done so many producers' albums. There'll be producers that do albums, and they'll be like, well, I do have my album, but I want you to do the other half. You know, and that's a privilege, because I know a lot of these dudes, they really get down on the music, so they really don't need me at all to make anything better on the album. But it shows they're willing to collab. They're willing to collab. And once I start my project, you know, I'm going to go to those same ones and be like, hey, I want one for you. Or it might be a half-and-half situation, too. But it's all about educating and unifying. I feel like that's what it is with the music. Like, right now, me and you, we tight.
We need to do something together for real, too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad that you came in, man. I want you to get the people where they can hit you up at, find out what you're doing new, and I'll play this last joint that you did send for me.
Oh, that's the remake of Atlantic Scarf sent for me. I was listening to that song one night. I love that song.
So where can they hit you up at?
SoundCloud.com/Big1Beats. They can email me at, you know, BigOneBeats@gmail.com. You can add me on Facebook. Big One Beats 1335. I forgot. You just put my Gmail in. You just put my Gmail in the search, BigOneBeats@gmail.com. You find me on Facebook. You add me, I add you back. No problem. I list up friend requests. That's it for right now. I got to get my website back up. So I just use SoundCloud and I just use Facebook for right now. And I'm on LinkedIn, too.
I want to thank you for coming in.
I want to thank you for having me. I appreciate it. 110, bro. You know how much I appreciate it.
Hey, well, you my dog. We go back.
Yeah.
For real. And I want you back on again when you got some more. I know you got like about 800 more joints to play. And also come in some artists that you put down, too, as well. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
But here we go. I'm going to play Send For Me and end it out. Thank you again, Big One Williams, for coming in, and Tony Exum Jr. for coming in as well. This is ATAZP.